League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato. I hit it hard,
man. All right, everybody, 8:06 here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Good Saturday morning. My name is Will Doctor. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour at Charlie Epps Show on Twitter, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Charlie is on break. Joining me is head pro at the Carlton Woods Fazio course, Jason Alexander. Behind the glass is producer Sean Mapes. We have a great show ahead of us today. We have a ton to discuss, from the Women's U.S. Open at Olympic, an amateur who's only three shots back. We also have the memorial going on at Jack's Place in Ohio, and we will discuss what's going on at the leaderboard and talk about the delicious shakes that they serve. Jason, how was your week?
Will, I tell you, happy to be here. We got the Tomball Country Club Summer Classic kicking off today. I'm pegging it at 11 a.m. Two-man scramble, tough format in Tomball, of course. But like you said, we got the Women's Open Memorial. We got some Brooks and Bryson drama. Everyone's favorite Harmon Billy's going to join us here coming out of the break. A loaded show here on Sports Map Radio.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Jason. I think there's going to be a lot to talk about with Bryson and Brooks and the PGA social media fund. I think with some of the vets commenting on it, we're going to have a lot to discuss today. And certainly missing John, but we're going to hear from him very soon.
Granato's busy making bogeys out in Missouri.
Yeah. Other things, you know, I think the two key things is the two courses that we're going to talk about today, Olympic and Muirfield. Two of the best championship venues in the country, and we're going to talk about, you know, maybe how Muirfield is going to get to the major championship venue.
I'm surprised they hadn't yet. We'll dive into that, and obviously Olympic Club has had a couple of U.S. Opens, and, like, it's a timeless golf course, great test of golf. We'll walk through a few holes and see what the women will be up against this weekend.
Absolutely, and of course, you know, the game is getting younger, as you know, Jason. Amateurs competing at an early stage. 17-year-old Megan Gane, three shots back at the U.S. Women's Open, and not even her first round of competing at this stage. She played in the last U.S. Women's Open. So, as you know, the game's getting younger. We're going to take a quick break here on the other side. We will have Billy Harmon to give us further West Coast insight on the U.S. Open and Memorial. So don't go anywhere. We will do that right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Okay, 8:12 here. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour at Charlie Epps Golf on Twitter on the Sports Map Radio Network, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance. And we're going to head over to the Progressive Guest Line and bring in Bill Harmon. Bill, you are here with Jason Alexander and I, and let's start off talking about the U.S. Women's Open at the Olympic Club. Bill, what have you seen thus far?
Well, I think it's great that the USGA is bringing the Women's Open to some of the traditional courses that the men play. I think they've got the course set up beautifully. Really looks good. I've been to the Olympic Club many times, so I know what a great golf course it is. And the scores, I think, indicate that it should be a feisty weekend. We only have 11 players under par after 2 days. I would imagine by Sunday afternoon, we might not see a handful of people under par. So I think they've set the course up wonderfully. They've now got it to where they can do whatever they want, really, on the weekend. They can make it as hard as they want or as playable as they want. And you've got some good players up there. Lee, number six, is a former champion. And Bang is a good player. NB Park has won everything. Lexi Thompson. So terrific. I think it's a terrific tournament. And listening to an interview with Michael Wan the other day, he said that they're going to announce some future sites that appear to be will be the similar rotation to what the men play. So I like it when I see the women play similar courses that the men play.
Mr. Harmon, your favorite pro here from Carlton Woods. Will told me how excited you were to have me on the show. You today.
My sparring partner, man. I like it. Makes for good radio. Now, well, you can only needle Charlie so much about mispronouncing every name.
You
need heroes and villains, and I guess it's a debate which one is the hero and which one's the villain in this conversation.
We don't need the golf doctor to say Hideki Matsuyama's name again, that's for sure. Hey, real quick, Bill, what are you thinking? Final score here over the weekend at Olympic. I'm predicting right around. I don't think they're going to go much lower on Saturday, Sunday with the course set up. I don't think we're going to see double digits. What's your take?
No, I would be surprised. I think it's very possible that 100 or 200 could win the tournament. I go back to the Open at Wingfoot, where there were about 30 guys under par after the first round. And then after 72 holes, there was one person under par. I've caddied in last groups at U.S. Opens on the weekend, and it's really difficult when you're leading these events to play courses this hard because I think you're playing kind of defense and rope-a-dope the whole time. So it depends on how they set it up. But watching yesterday afternoon, the greens got firm and quick, and the rough is 40. So I think the USGA really can do whatever they want now. And I personally occasionally like seeing a tournament where even par 1 or 2 under is going to win. So I'm not a big fan of watching tournaments for 30 under wins every week. So I hope they set it up tough. One thing about the women golfers, the elite players, they're unbelievably straight hitters. So that might tie into a slightly lower score, but I would predict 2 under will win the tournament.
Well, I'll tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. I like when even par wins as well, a couple under. But Olympic Club, I know you've been out there, I'm sure, quite often. I've got a very wonderful chance to play it a couple times. Well, it's so interesting to me, and Olympic Club's one of my top three ever that I've played, just because of the course design, the contours. It's on the side of a hill. You've got to work the golf ball both directions. And as accurate as these ladies are, I agree with you, they're still going to have to move the ball both ways. And I think if those greens get firm, the back-to-back par fives on 16, 17, and climbing that hill up 18 to crown a champion, I think it's going to be a tight race. And I'm with you. I think 2 or 3 under wins.
Yeah. I agree with you as well, and you know, it's interesting how the course conditions have brought out some lower scores over the first 2 days. You know, Billy mentioned Shenzhen Feng, who's in fifth at 3 under, Lexi Thompson, MB Park, who are both tied at 6 at 2 under. I want to open the conversation to both of you with this question, but, you know, with all the favorites at the top, there is a dark horse amateur 17-year-old Stanford commit, yeah. Megan Gagne. And she
could be Bill's granddaughter.
Yeah, she's put together two very solid rounds. She shot 67 Thursday and then backed it up with an even par 71 yesterday. She's currently 2 shots back of the lead. And what do you guys think the chances are that we could get a 17-year-old winner that is currently a junior in high school? You know, she's already so experienced. She played the last U.S. Open at Shoal Creek. This girl is playing well beyond her age. What do you guys think the chances are that we see her at the top of the leaderboard at the end of the week?
Well, Bill, I'll interrupt real quick. I think history tells us that it's almost impossible. I think history shows us that. But history's, you know, records are made to be broken. I think if she could hang in there and finish top 10, what a wonderful story it would be. And the experience that she's gaining over the last couple of years playing in the Open at this young age, I just think she has a chance to be a superstar here. And she's got all the sauce about her, too. She's wonderful looking, great golf swing, great personality. I think she's a budding star for ladies golf.
Yeah, I think, like you said, history is against her, but we just don't know. I watched her interview yesterday, and I just couldn't believe how mature and poised she was at age 17. I couldn't get over that, really. And, you know, yesterday she was a couple over at one point, and then she brought it back. So, you know, obviously this weekend is going to be a slightly different game for her. But, you know, I remember something Will Zalatoris said at the Masters that I thought was pretty interesting. It was kind of funny, but it was also true. He said, you know, I was dumb enough to think I could play in the Masters, so I might be dumb enough to think I could win the Masters.
I can win. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And so she might just be someone that she said right away she liked the course, it fit her eye, all that kind of stuff. And so we don't know. She's the kind of the trump card in here. You know, what if she goes out and plays a solid round today and stays within one, two, or three of the leader? Then it's game on. My feeling always when you get to the back nine of a major, if you can get within three or four shots, you have action.
Yes.
So I think today is a day. I know they call it moving day, and I think some of the people that even one over, two over will make a move. But I think by and large that you want to stay in the tournament today, because come Sunday, that back nine is going to be pretty sporty.
Will, I got to ask you, and I think we've got all the age brackets covered here in studio with you and Bill and me. But, Bill, don't you think, and Will, that a 17-year-old nowadays, the training and the experience that they get at such a young age growing up in the game is so much different, I know, from your era and my era as well. But I think they're a little bit more prepared to pull something off like this. And I think we'll see more of this kind of moving forward. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I think Bill knows this as well. You know, the instruction that is accessible at a younger age, you know, has definitely risen here in the last 10 years. And I think I'm glad you brought this up. The other thing that the young players are ready for is kind of the social attention that comes with the success. And one thing Megan said yesterday after the round that I just love is she is better. She said, I wish there was people surrounding me outside the ropes every tournament that I played in. She says, I love the cameras on me. And that's so huge at 17. And I think Billy brought up a good point with Zalatoris, you know, maybe not sure what you're getting into at this age. But the bottom line is, you know, she's confident this week and ready to go. And that being said, she's my pick to win this event.
You're right about how ready they are. They play more tournaments, these AJGA events, than tour pros play tournaments almost every year. So that's all they do is compete. And like you said, they've had teachers since they were a kid. They've got sports psychologists. They've got nutritionists. They've got all that stuff going for them, if that, in fact, does help them when they hand them the scorecard and pencil when they're by themselves inside the ropes. That's always debatable. But they're definitely more prepared, certainly when I was playing junior golf. And for some reason, it seems like the women, the younger women player, mature quicker than the gentlemen do when it comes to playing in these big events. You always see young amateurs, even that little Lucy Lee is in pretty good shape. She's about, she's only two over. What is she? She's got to be at least 16 now.
She's 18, and this is her fourth year out here. She's pretty much a veteran.
How about that, huh?
Well, I tell you, Bill, I got a 20-piece McNugget pack, supersized from McDonald's. That was my go-to when I was 17 years old. So, yeah, times have changed a little bit.
Real quick before we head to break in about 30 seconds, who's y'all's pick for this week for the LPGA Women's US Open?
Bill, I'm taking Lexi Thompson. I think she's got the moxie. I think it'd be a wonderful story. I think Olympic Club has produced, I know on the men's side, great champions with wonderful short games. I'm going to take Lexi to make a little charge this weekend and win the United States Open 2021.
I'm taking NB Park because she can putt and Lexi can't.
And I'm taking amateur Megan Gagne because she has the putter rolling. 24 putts in the first day, 28 in the second day. Okay, when we come back, we will discuss Muirfield Village, where they hold the memorial, and more on the Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka drama. We will do that right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Go follow us on Twitter at Charlie Epps Show on SportsMap Radio Network, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Don't go anywhere.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
8:26 here. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. At Charlie Epps Show on Twitter on Sports Map Radio Network, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance. We just wrapped up Women's U.S. Open talk in segment one. And before we move on to what's going on the PGA Tour, I want to ask y'all about the burger hot dog at Olympic, because I've had this argument all week with a few ladies out there and a couple members at Olympic. The ladies there say it's unbelievable that are there this week for the U.S. Open. It's a great snack. And the members say, oh, it's just – Costco meat, and it's just another burger dog. I want to ask y'all, is this snack one of those where Olympic makes the hot the burger dog more pure?
Bill, I want to go first real quick because I want you to talk about it. You probably had more of them than I have. I have tasted, they call them the hot dog bills out there at Olympic Club. I thought it was delicious, but it's just like going to Augusta and having the pimento cheese. I think your brain is a little placebo effect. You're already ready and knowing it's going to taste amazing because what everybody's built it up to be. I think that's what marketing does for you. But yes, it was a burger dog. It was a burger, a piece of burger meat in a hot dog. But it went down pretty smooth for old consummate pro here. Bill, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was pretty good when I had it. I think they put a lot of salt and pepper on it, so it's tasty. And, yeah, I think you're right. It's kind of one of those traditional things. But it is good. You know, I'd rather have that than a hot dog at the turn. So I like it, but it probably has gotten a little bit more publicity than it warrants. But at the same time, it's one of those little things that when you go to the Olympic Club and you make the turn, I guess you make the turn out there on the course kind of I think that most people look forward to having it. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I surely do. But, okay, moving on to the PGA Tour stop this week at Muirfield Village where they're playing the Memorial. I'm sure you can both attest to this. But one of the perks of one person making all the decisions to golf course renovations instead of a corporately owned course is that the redos can happen at any point in time. And in this case of Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus ultimately has the final say to everything that happens on this golf course. Justin Thomas said after the pro-am that Jack made this golf course easier for members and amateurs, but tougher on the pros. Others like Bubba Watson and John Rahm, attested to that. Bill, what are the pros and cons to what you've seen from the 2020 redo of Muirfield Village?
Well, watching it yesterday, I think it's really sad. I caddied there in the late 70s and the 80s when I caddied for Jay Haas. I probably caddied in 10 of the memorial events. And it's never played fast. The course is meant to play fast. They have very slight undulations in the fairway that all seem to slope towards the water. And so I don't think we ever get to see the course the way Jack wanted it to play. And once again this week, you know, the balls are hitting and stopping, and we've got John Rahm now leading at 10 under. So it's hard for me to say because I don't think Jack has, out of all the memorials I don't think he's had four or five of them where the course played fast the way he designed it. So there's something about that tournament that it always rains, it always plays soft, and I think it ends up playing a lot easier than it really is. So I have no problem. It's the house that Jack built. It's a beautiful course. I don't know if either one of you have ever played it, but so many holes, you have elevated tees, you get up on a tee and you can see everything. And in John Rahm's interview that I saw on TV the other day, he said the course fits his eye. And that's something that people don't talk about a lot in this day of measurements and ground forces and glutes firing and everything. great players normally play with their eyes. And if they have a course that they like the way it looks, they'll usually play pretty good. But I just don't think it ever gets to play the way Jack has designed it to play, to be candid about it.
Well, I thought the most major championship test they had was last year during Corona on the back-to-back. They got that pretty firm and fast for the second one, but I agree with you. It's never played that firm and fast at the Memorial outside of that event, and I think single digits might have won that when Morikawa beat JT in the playoff, but they weren't going very low. But it looks a little softer this week. I think the scores, I think the boys are going to go off, and we'll get to our picks a little bit later. But John Rahm's putting on a show right now in Columbus.
And Jason, you certainly know about trying to get top-tier events to premier golf courses. Carlton Woods, obviously, where you're a head pro, holds one of the most established junior events and has held multiple USGA events in your time there. You know, I want to ask you and certainly Bill, what is Muirfield Village's next step? You know, they held a Ryder Cup in Muirfield in 1987, a U.S. amateur in 92, where Justin Leonard famously won, and had a very successful President's Cup in 2013 in which Jordan Spieth made his professional Team USA debut. So, Jason, I ask you this. What is Jack Nicklaus's next step to bringing a major championship to Muirfield?
Well, I want to get our season host here. I want to get his opinion because I'm a little bit surprised. I think the shot quality out there, and I was telling Will before the show, Bill, you know, it attracts the best, one of the best fields in golf, and I think that's what great golf courses do. And I know Mr. Nicklaus is a big part of that, but the location's good. The shot quality's there. Why hadn't they hosted a U.S. Open yet?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think the course is hard enough to be
really?
An open course. You know, they shoot zero on it, really.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of low scored tournaments. I think it would be more apt to have the PGA, maybe. The PGA tends to go to different courses. But as tough as the course appears on TV, it does not play that tough for these players. And he's been trying to toughen it up every year for about the last 20 years since the ball started going 30, 40 yards further. So I don't really see it as a U.S. Open course. I could see maybe the PGA there. But if you just go through the history of his event, they've had a lot of tournaments where they shot nothing on it. And I don't look at it personally as being nearly as good as a Wingfoot or a Shinnecock or an Olympic Club or
sure.
any of those courses. I put it right in a tier right below it.
Well, that's a good take. Yeah.
So let's talk about what type of game does get it done around Muirfield Village, especially with the conditions that are being presented this week. This course has gotten a lot of rain, but it's obviously very playable due to the elevated greens and incredible design.
The sub-air.
Yeah. it really seems like this is just a ball striker's golf course. If we take a look at the top 10 on the leaderboard, seven of the top 10 players are in the top 10 category in ball striking this week, and Rahm, Cantlay, and Scheffler all leading the way. To me, it seems like this course, because of the flat greens and bent grass, probably what makes it a little easier and why, you know, major championship venues might not get around to it. It seems like it gives leeway to guys who aren't as good with the flat stick to get into the mix. Bill, what type of game would you say best navigates around this place?
Well, it's certainly a ball striker's course. There's no doubt about it. You have a lot of shots that set up for people that like to see the ball going left to right. There's a lot of tee shots that way. There's a lot of greens angled that way. John Rahm has expressed a love for this course right from the get-go. He's won it already, I believe. Now he's 10 under. One of the things that I like about Rahm, and I was never one of these guys that needs to tone down his emotions and his temper and all that stuff, because I think he truly does demand. He's a winner. He plays to win. And so there's a difference between guys that choke and a difference between guys that want to win so bad that they might get too amped up. I think he was one of those guys. And so I think he's going to be very hard to beat this week because he really hits the ball good. Cantlay obviously is good. But I do think that it's one of those courses that just fits certain players' eyes. I know Jay Haas played there very well over the course of his career. He never won there. He's never been a long hitter. But he loved the left-to-right look of a lot of the shots there. So, once again, I think there are certain players that play golf visually and play with their eyes, and they like it when they get on a tee and the architect tells them what to do.
Well, I think that's a classic Nicklaus signature, and you've mentioned it earlier. Everything moving left to right, that fits the Golden Bear's eyes for his career, and it fits his golf courses too, no doubt about it. Real quick, Bill, I got to make one statement. Last time I was on, we before the PGA, I picked Ricky Fowler, and Epps and Granato just railed me. They threw shade at me for the whole week.
And he played good.
And he top 10 and almost finished T4, missed about a 10-footer on 18. But I just wanted to make sure that all the listeners, the millions and millions here on Sports Map, recognize what a hot take that was for the Councilman Pro.
He's playing good this week, too, by the way.
That's what I was looking at. The resurgence is coming.
Thomas about Ricky. Very good. But nobody picked Mickelson. I know that much.
There's no doubt about that. We got to touch on Phil and the Wanamaker Trophy here when we come back out of the break.
Absolutely. Bill, I'm going to have to pick your mind on Phil's chances going to the U.S. Open because obviously none of us thought he was going to get it done at Whistling Straits where I was for the PGA Championship.
Well, the next time Phil was going to win was going to be on the Champions Tour. It sure wasn't going to be on the...
Oh, okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to discuss the milkshakes at Muirfield Village as well as the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, then make our final picks for the Memorial in the last segment. And we'll be right here on the other side of the Charlie Epps Golf Hour presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Stay right with us.
Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
All right, 840 here on Sports Map Radio Network. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour at Charlie Epps Golf on Twitter, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Before we get into the U.S. Open here in 2 weeks, one last thing to recap our little memorial conversation. We discussed the Burger Dogs at the Olympic Club heading into the Midwest section of the United States. We have the world-famous milkshake at Muirfield Village. Billy, I wanted to ask you, since me nor Jason has made our way up there yet, is the milkshake at Muirfield Village, does it live up to the hype?
Well, to be honest with you, when I was caddying on tour, they really weren't inviting the caddies into the clubhouse to have milkshakes, so I can't comment on it. We were lucky. Actually, that's not true. Jack treated the caddies. He was one of the first hosts back in the 70s and 80s that treated the caddies much differently than the other tournaments. So I'm not going to take a shot at Muirfield or Jack on that because he was terrific to the caddies and provided good food, but I don't recall the milkshake being part of the menu when I was there.
Well, we'll have to hold out a little longer then. So,
Will, you and I got to get up there and we'll do a test.
Yeah,
test,
we do.
Okay?
We'll do
a quality control.
So the players are going to finish up here at Memorial this week, and then we have the Palmetto Championship in South Carolina at Congaree, which will be more of a prep event, a bit of a weaker field. The week after is the 2020 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, which seems like it can't come fast enough after Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship at Kiowa. I'm obliged to open the discussion right here. Billy, what does Phil Mickelson have to do to hold on to the consistency with the driver he had at Kiowa and channel that at Torrey?
Well, if you remember the last time they had the Open at Torrey Pines, Phil decided, in his infinite wisdom, to not use a driver.
Yeah, that's right.
He had five wedges. Butch was working with him. And Butch at one point said, well, if you're such a good wedge player, why do you need five wedges?
Why do you need five?
So he played the tournament without a driver, which at the time was the longest U.S. Open course in history, a course that he grew up in, on. And he made this decision on Thursday. He had never played Torrey Pines in his life without a driver. And he made a decision on Thursday morning to play the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines without a driver. So when I was doing a show called On the Range with Gary Williams on the Golf Channel, Gary Williams said something that has stuck with me since day one, and Phil proved it again at the PGA. He said, there's never been a great player that you can't get a trend line on like Phil Mickelson. He could miss three cuts in a row and then win a tournament by 10. So even though he did win the PGA, and even though we are going to almost his home course as a junior golfer, I still think he's unpredictable. The only thing I can tell you that I've learned about Phil over the years and times I've spent around him, he has a childlike innocence, love for the game of golf, and he's never lost it. He's the most resilient player, I think, of my lifetime. No bad beats put him down. So it wouldn't surprise me if he shot 80-80, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's leading after two rounds. I have no idea what Phil Mickelson will do.
Well, speaking of Phil, a couple of things I wanted to touch on. I loved his social media post, drinking a little vino out of the Wanamaker Trophy here a couple of days ago. And if you don't think golfers can move the needle here, Billy Harmon, what did he have? He had a little vino from Napa Valley, Black Magic, and it sold out in 24 hours after Phil's social media post. So pretty neat there. I like your take on him at the Open. You just don't know what to expect. I do like Mickelson and Brady to take down DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers in the match coming up. You can get Phil and Tom at plus 160, almost 2-1 on your money. So that's where we're going to lay a little cash from old cuz here.
Tom did not look like the player he is on the football field on the golf course in that last match.
No, he was a weak grip, open face slicer.
He needs a lesson, Bill.
I couldn't even imagine that nobody could help him. You could help him if you were a good teacher in one swing with that weak grip. And he had a bag full of lob wedges at the top of his swing.
Well, the other movie that golf fans are waiting to see at Torrey Pines for the U.S. Open is the drama that's going to go down between Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. Both are going to be heavy favorites going into the U.S. Open. And will be possibly paired together with Gary Woodland. I know we have a couple other players that would be maybe a little bit better for the drama in his place. Gary's a little bit more laid-back, reserved guy. There have been a lot of rumors that DeChambeau's camp has tried to veto the pairing, but I'm sure any third player would want a first-class ticket to that show. Here's my question. Every week since the PGA Championship, Bryson has been heckled by fans. Heckled in his sense, simply, the fans call him Brooksy, and Bryson asked security for fans to make their way out. Bill, if you were on the bag of DeChambeau, would you tell him to channel out the feud that is happening between him and Brooks right now? Are we looking at this as a fixed act between the two players in order to climb the ranks in the $40 million PGA social media money list?
Well, I don't like heckling on a golf course, to be honest with you. I recall talking to Patrick Reed's caddy at the U.S. Open, and I applauded him for going at that spectator in Australia at the President's Cup. I don't like it to be my – I personally don't. I think – I jokingly say that, it would be great theater if Bryson and Brooks were paired together. But I think the USGA probably will want the attention just to be on the competition and not on this social media little cat fight that they have. I think it would be fun. It's Connors McEnroe in tennis years ago, which was must-see TV. But I'm going to bet that they don't pair them together because they'll want the attention to be on the quality of golf and not the sideshow of that. So I'd be surprised if they did pair them together, although – as a fan, there's a part of me that would like to see it. But at the same time, players play with each other all the time that don't like each other. I caddied in 350 tournaments, and I can assure you we were paired with people we didn't like. It just wasn't a public thing. So,
well, Bill,
players get paired together all the time that don't like each other.
Well, watching the Bryson and Brooks, I think Brooks Koepka's coming out of his shell a little bit. He's obviously the alpha out there. I think he's showing a little bit more personality. His social media post after Bryson maybe got a couple of people kicked out, he's sending them cases of beer and showing a little bit more personality. Is it the USGA's responsibility, even though I do kind of agree with your take, that I don't think they will either? You put Patrick Reed, who's coming off a win at Torrey Pines, Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka in a three ball on Thursday and Friday at the U.S. Open. You're attracting every golf fan, plus the fringe golf fans, to tune in on Thursday, Friday at Torrey Pines.
Well, their heckling would be all time, I think, if you had all three of them there together.
Yes.
And if you did that, maybe all three of them would kind of bond and laugh about it.
Right.
and that might actually bring them together and stick up for each other. But I just don't think they'll do it. It's just my gut feeling. Maybe sure. they will. I think they'll want the attention. The USGA has a weird way of making themselves a story during the U.S. Open yeah. and not the players. And I think if they did this, once again, everyone would be asking the USGA, why'd you do it? Why'd you do it? So my gut feeling tells me that they're not only going to not pair them together, they'll pair them on opposite sides of the draw
right.
Thursday, Friday. That's just my idea. That's what I think will happen. I don't know that, obviously.
Well, you bring up Connors, McEnroe. We've had Tiger, Phil, Zinger, Seve, all these all-time feuds. What are we talking about? Watson and Gary Player. I think it makes the game more interesting for the middle golf fans. All pure golf fans are going to watch the U.S. Open because it is the United States Open. So we'll see what the USGA does. And, look, it's going to be a wonderful event no matter who they pair at Torrey Pines in San Diego.
Well, if they did do it, believe me, I'd be the first one to tune in to watch it. But I think both of them would just kind of ignore each other, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I hope Brooks, you know, just shows up. And you know, I certainly don't like this, you know, Bryson getting heckled at Memorial and then Brooks making a video, you know, saying, you know, thanks for supporting me out there, fans, when he's not even playing. I want him to show up and start winning again and actually back up some of his talk.
If I could inject something here, when Curtis Strange played Nick Faldo in an 18-hole playoff at the U.S. Open yes. at the Country Club in Brookline in 1988, I asked Curtis, did you guys talk at all? And he said, yes. I told him I was playing a Titleist 2 on the first tee. And we never said another word until he had to congratulate me on 18.
I love it.
Never said one word in 18 holes. So they knew how to do it. They knew how to just get in their own world and not worry about the other guy.
Bill, just switching gears just super fast. I got to ask you, so I'm playing a big barbecue event at Tomball Country Club this weekend, the Summer Classic. But I spend my summer, especially back in college, playing all around East Texas. The barbecue circuit here in the state of Texas is quite famous, especially back in the 80s, 90s. Did you ever make it down here and play any of the big stuff here around the state?
I did not. You know, the only time I really spent in Texas is when Dick was at River Oaks and Butch was at Lock and Bar before Butch became Butch, kind of.
Right.
And so I had a lot of barbecue, but I never got involved in kind of that Texas tour. But I did spend a lot of time in the Houston area, a lot of time.
Well, it's funny. Back in the era, we had Freddie Couples, Bruce Litsky, and some of these events out in deep East Texas. Those Calcuttas would get up around $350,000, and they shut them down after the NCAA got involved. But it was a legendary run back in the early to mid-'80s out in East Texas. So
sounds like a hell of a lot of fun.
Woo!
And you know, Freddie accidentally turned pro. He turned pro on accident.
Yes.
You know that story? He goes to a pro event and says, yeah, I'll take money, and college coach calls him. Yeah. Well, you're not on the team anymore. But
it's classic Freddie, and shout out to Joe LaCava back on the bag with Ola Boom Boom this week on the Champions Tour.
That, huh?
Pretty cool story.
Did you ever think Joe would get on another bag, Bill?
Well, he and Freddie have a great relationship, and with Tiger not having, you know, maybe never going to be able to play again for all we know.
Yeah.
I think it was a natural, and Freddie and Tiger are very close to each other. I'm pretty sure of that, and so I don't think it was a big deal. I read where somebody said that now Joe will get fired, but no, I think Freddie and Tiger go way back. They're good buddies, and I think it's a non-issue other than the fact it's good to see them together. Joe's a good, straightforward guy. I've known him for 40 years.
Will, when are we making some picks? I'm ready. I got some hot takes here.
We're gonna come back after the break and make some picks here on the other side. We'll talk just a little bit more about Torrey and finish up with our picks at Memorial right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
8:56 here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network, presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. So, Jason, Bill, let's wrap things up with how we think the Memorial is going to close out and a couple picks. Jason, we'll start with you.
Well, first off, I want to mention, Bill, did you pick that intro music for the last segment here? Because that was ZZ Top, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. That had to be pretty popular back in your era.
Yeah, it was. I like ZZ Top. I like old rock and roll. In fact, I'm quite a rock and roll aficionado. I like rock and roll music. So I would surprise you with my knowledge of that.
So here, you know, looking up on a couple of sites here, if anybody likes to wager at all, we got two big round three matchups today before we get into the tournament picks. We had DeChambeau versus Spieth, old Bri versus Jordy. They're both going off about even money. And then Patrick Cantlay versus Scottie Scheffler. Everybody a little bit in the mix. DeChambeau and Spieth back around a couple under par. And then Cantlay versus Scheffler. Billy, you got any big picks for just a round three matchup today with those two?
I would take Spieth. And I got to believe that Cantlay is favored over Scheffler. I would take Scotty on that one.
I would, too. You're getting about 1.5 on your money on Scotty Scheffler. I like both of those. We'll take
the I would take him, even though I think the money will all go on Cantlay because he's won the tournament. He's better than him right now. But I think Scheffler is going to be end up being the second-best player of those four guys, of Morikawa, Hovland, and Wolf.
Yeah. Cantlay is not only, one of the top ball strikers in the field statistically, like we were talking about earlier. But, we certainly have those fair share of guys who, are just having a total ball striking performance, don't necessarily need to putt as well. Cantlay's putting, fantastic as well. 16 in strokes gained putting this week.
Well, he is the closest stroke to my favorite putting stroke of all time, Ben Crenshaw. He's got that long, fluid. It didn't look like he's actually hitting the ball. And so I think that can get a little bit decelerated sometimes. But when he's feeling the rhythm, he makes everything. So look out for Cantlay. But round three, I'm taking the horns today. I'm going to play a little Scheffler and Spieth combo. Put the two fingers up.
I like that.
Yes, sir. All right, let's talk. Who's going to win this weekend? I've got some odds here. Obviously, Rahm is the big favorite. He's going off at back plus 180. I'm going to pick a little sleeper. I like to get a little bit of action on my money. Tony Finau right now at 4 under par, 4 back. He's plus 1,700. Can Finau make a run over the weekend to catch Rahm? I think it's going to be Rahm, Cantlay, Scheffler, and Finau coming down the stretch.
Man, would that be...
I'm going with Shoffley.
And Xander's right there, too. Yes, the X-Man. Can he get it done tomorrow, though, Bill? Can Xander close the show?
He's got the arm lock putter going this week for the first time.
That scares me.
He's been quoted as saying it should be legal. He's using it now, and I don't blame him.
I was going to ask the same about
it. It's legal, too, but if they let you do it and you putt better, then you use it.
Okay, and I'm going to go with Max Homa, the hometown Cali kid, putting and ball striking it very well. I'm going with Max Homa for my pick at the Memorial Championship. Guys, it's been a great show with
you.
What
a great morning, boys.
Jason, Bill, thank you. Sean, thank you very much.
We didn't even get in an argument this time.
No. Billy, we did good today, Mr. Harmon.
And you can follow the show on Twitter at Charlie Epps Golf Show. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Show presented by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.